You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top. Wow.
And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Canelo Alvarez and GGG ends in controversy, and the UFC fight card that there wasn't much buzz about ended up delivering, and we're going to recap both of those fight cards here on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Of course, we're brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is your app for MMA, wrestling, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. You can download Fight free today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Of course, that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. They always have a bunch of MMA wrestling and boxing up there. Coming up this weekend, they will have a Road FC 42. That'll be free on early Saturday morning, 3 a.m. Eastern time. Also on Saturday, they will have ACB 70, which is headlined by Luke Barnett versus Scott Askham. Of course, both those guys, former UFC fighters. Of course, they have a ton of other action combat sports on Fight TV this weekend, so be sure to check out our friends over there. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It is going good, Jason. What a weekend of combat sports, man. Between Canelo and that UFC card, absolutely living up to expectations, and then, like, trouncing those expectations and driving 127 miles per hour past. Just a great UFC card, a great boxing card, but obviously it's your birthday, Jason. Happy birthday. What's a better way to start off your birthday than recording a podcast in the morning with me talking about Justin Ledet and Zua Anyanwu?
Well, I got up, of course. I'm an early riser, so I was up watching the UFC event this morning. It was nice to be able to get through an event that quickly. Of course, 10 fights where you had a bunch of only two decisions on the fight card, so pretty easy to get through that fight card. Of course, on Saturday night, I went out to watch the Canelo GGG fight. Was at the same bar that I go to watch UFC pay-per-view events. Definitely a different audience than you see there for an MMA event, and I think it's not fair to compare Saturday night to a typical UFC pay-per-view event, because, I mean, look, that was the best boxing matchup, you know, a buzz, you know, outside of what we saw Mayweather and McGregor, but from a boxing aspect, that was the biggest matchup that could be made this year. But it was definitely a different audience, an audience that was more enthusiastic about the fight in between rounds. I mean, every time a round in, a lot of people were clapping, which necessarily, you know, at least in my experiences, don't necessarily see during an MMA event. But look, I thought GGG won. I mean, look, the 114-114 scorecard, I don't have any major issues with that one.
Yeah, I don't either, man, because some of the rounds are pretty close, and I felt like for the majority of that fight, it was like the story was Canelo at times would land the better shots, but it would be Golovkin throughout the entire round, pushing the pace, having high volume, and being aggressive. And I guess you could talk yourself into some of those close rounds that you would have scored for Golovkin going to Canelo, but obviously, the big-time elephant in the room is the third scorecard for Canelo Alvarez was just so outrageous that it's hard to find anyone that in a world where we're looking for hot takes and kind of going against the grain, I haven't really seen that article about how that Canelo scorecard was correct.
No, I don't see. I mean, I did get some tweets where people, you know, basically had, you know, kind of alluded to what you said about there about Canelo in certain rounds. You know, he just landed the bigger punches. You know, but to me, I thought GG won the fight. You know, I think, you know, 7-5, 8-4 is kind of where I think it is the right number for him. I mean, he ultimately is. It's another black eye on the sport of boxing. I mean, look, and we're not here to you know, we're not the MMA guys that are going to rail on boxing. I love both sports. You love both sports. It's just for that casual sports fan that, you know, whether they were sitting at home and paid the $80 to watch this fight, or they went to a friend's house, or they're like myself and went to a bar, and maybe they're not that hardcore fight fan. They're just that casual sports fan, and they knew this was a major fight. It's just another black eye on boxing.
It's a black eye on boxing and a lot of green in the pockets of Canelo and Golovkin, because they can run this one back. It's 2-2, man. I mean, it's the whole entire storyline heading out of this fight is the scorecard. You Google Canelo versus Golovkin, the top Google news articles are about the scorecard. But long term for them, they're probably going to be able to cash in on a rematch and then cash in on another multi-million dollar payday. So a lot of green in their pocket, a black eye. But I do think this is a consistent black eye. It's never one that goes away, because what we've seen basically the entire history of combat sports, more in boxing lately than in mixed martial arts, but in both sports, is poor scorecards, poor judging. And obviously then you begin to diagnose what the problem is. Is it the individuals? Is it the system? I think in this specific situation, Jason, you have to identify the individual, Adelaide Byrd, just because, like, this isn't some shock that she had a bad decision. Like, if you were a mixed martial arts or boxing fan and you saw her in the middle of the hard camera, which I'm sure most people did, you were like, oh, man, I hope this doesn't go the distance. Or if you just saw the judge listing, like, on September 13th, like 3 days before the fight, Chris Mannix for Yahoo Sports tweeted out, "Remember the name Adelaide Byrd? She has had very questionable cards in the past." And now that tweet has like 2,200 retweets. So it's not like this was some big shock that she had a bad scorecard, Jason. She kind of has a history at times of not being able to process what took place in a combat sports venue.
You know, one of the things that ultimately, you know, frustrates me about combat sports is when we have these situations come out, whether it's judges or referees, that, you know, we don't, for the most part, we never get to hear from the judges. We never get to hear from the referees to, you know, defend their scorecard or defend their decision refereeing a fight, which I really do hope at some point that maybe we can get to this where, and I relate this to the NFL because obviously I'm a football guy, where, you know, there's a pool reporter here in Tampa. I'm not sure who it is this year, but last year it was Greg Allman of the Tampa Bay Times, where he had the ability to go talk to the officials. And then what he does is, you know, transcribes his conversation and gives it to the rest of the media. And I would hope that at some point that can happen in combat sports. One thing that I think is ultimately tremendous is that Bob Bennett, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, did talk to the media. There was a little heated back and forth between himself and a media member, which, first off, kudos to the media member for really pushing Bob Bennett, because the media member, I forget his name, basically said, "I'm going to ask the questions that I think a lot of people here want to ask but are afraid to ask because they're afraid of losing their credential," which I was like, damn, he went there. And at that point, because on the left-hand side of the screen, you can see Oscar De La Hoya basically shaking his head no, you're not going to lose your credential. But it's fresh air to see an executive director come out and talk about it. But, you know, one of the things that, and I want to kind of correlate this to MMA, because, look, we're primarily an MMA show, is that I wonder how many championship-level fighters in the UFC, because, look, Bellator doesn't go to Nevada. You know, they've only done one event in Nevada, and they went to Reno. And a lot of people that you talk to say, basically, they're never going to be able to do a show on the Strip because of the UFC. But if I am Tony Ferguson, I am Kevin Lee, and I know that the judges and officials were just announced for their event. I don't believe Adelaide Byrd. I'll Google it here in a second. But if you're, you know, maybe you're going to be on that December 30th pay-per-view in Las Vegas. Maybe you are Justin Gaethje and Eddie Alvarez are going to headline the Ultimate Fighter finale on December 1st in Las Vegas. Is Saturday night going to be something that you think about when you know the commission is going to set the officials, and you have your management, or you go directly to the UFC, say, "This, I do not want Adelaide Byrd scoring my fight because I feel that I may not be being, she's not who I want judging my fight."
Yeah, if you see her specific name on the docket, then that's when you begin to have some type of concern. But I feel like for these fighters, they can't afford to be thinking about the judging and the referees and the officials. Obviously, at times, there have been instances where you've seen fighters ask for specific referees not to be in the cage with them. But that, to me, seems like such a rare occurrence that I just think these fighters have to be total tunnel vision unless you see Adelaide Bird on the docket. I mean, that to me would be a bad idea for Nevada because her name is so hot right now based on what just took place. To just throw her out there in another high-profile event, I believe would be a pretty big mistake. But Nevada, you know, is still one of the best states to fight in, I would say. I would say the top state. Like, if I was a fighter wanting to fight, my number one state would probably be California. I would want to fight in with that commission. But Nevada, to me, is quite up there. And bad judging is not a problem that is limited to Nevada. In fact, it's much worse in other states. It's just that Nevada has some of the more high-profile judges that have consistently had bad scorecards, largely due to the great amount of events they've had. It's like something where if you have 10 opportunities to screw up versus another person having four, well, the person with 10 is probably going to screw up more just because they had more opportunities. So I think for these fighters, man, you got to put it in the back of your mind. But I tell you what, if we get a bad decision in a high-profile fight, in the Kevin Lee Johnson fight, the Kevin Lee Ferguson fight, that's when we're going to have a major storyline going on about like bad judging killing combat sports. To me, that's something where the result has to happen, and then we continue on this conversation.
And when it looks, when the judges for that Ferguson Lee fight are Chris Lee, Comegito, and Derek Clearly, so she's not in there. And I would expect Bob Bennett's not going to put her in a high profile fight for a while. But when it comes to referees, the last one I remember Daniel Cormier. I want to say he was not necessarily in favor of Herb Dean being the referee for when he was supposed to fight John Jones at UFC 200, as I recall. The only other fighter I can really remember that vetoed an official, and you got to go back to the second time I want to say that Mir and Lesnar fought, and Lesnar did not want Steve Mazzagatti as his referee. So it's always surprising that you never hear fighters kind of say that. It's usually after the fact, when something bad happens. You think of Michael Chiesa, for instance, what happened earlier this year in his fight against Kevin Lee, where, you know, he came out against Mario Yamasaki. But, you know, look, if you didn't want Mario, you know, refereeing your fight, you should have found out before, you know, you got the fight week of who was assigned to book. I mean, at the end of the day, if I'm repping a fighter, you know, I'm having that conversation with them every time he fights. Is there any officials? I mean, look, I'm here in the state of Florida. I can tell you there are, you know, referees that fighters do not like in this state. And they go to the commission and will say, I do not want him refereeing my fight because I feel basically he's not going to protect us, you know, because that's ultimately what the referee's in there to do. So to me, it'll be interesting to see if there is any change there. And, but look, when Canelo and Gigi have the rematch, we both know it's going to happen. There's too much money on the table for it not to happen. I'll be watching.
Me too, man. Because for boxing, obviously, the question is, what's next? Who's the next star? And surely someone will rise out of the ashes and become a pay-per-view draw. But for the most part, I can't really pinpoint where else the boxing world would go other than Canelo, GGG for the big money fights. I'm not sure. I would love for you guys to tweet out at me what you think is the next single fighter or one specific fight that boxing can run out there on pay-per-view and do a huge gate like they just did. But Canelo GGG 2 is one where it's guaranteed to be just as big or bigger than what you just took place here. So when that much money's on the line and you have two groups that have already fought and shown interest in fighting, they're going to fight again. And it's probably going to hopefully have a definitive winner. And it may be a fight that favors Canelo as GGG ages. I would still pick Golovkin, but the story heading into this one was how Golovkin was 35 years old, and maybe the next time they fight, he'll be 36.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a note on Sunday where they're talking about, you know, GEG's management wants to have him fight in December, and then, you know, sometime it looks like, you know, May of next year, maybe have that rematch against Canelo. Maybe Lomachenko could be that next star for boxing. He's going to be fighting in December on ESPN, which, you know, look, as a consumer, I love the fact that we can watch, you know, a guy like Lomachenko fight on ESPN as opposed to pay-per-view. As, you know, look, it's, I mean, look, I'm sure there was a lot of people who just didn't want to pay that $80 to watch Canelo GGG. But it's great to see what, you know, look, I'm not a Bob Arum guy, but I do like what he's doing by putting, you know, all of his fighters on ESPN. So,
the crazy one is Andre Ward. Like, the American, the Olympian, 32-0. The Kovalev rematch had some buzz, but how Andre Ward isn't a huge star, I do not understand at all. Like, yeah, makes no sense.
Well,
to me.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, and look, we talk about this with MMA all the time. You gotta get those casual sports fans to tune in. I mean, that's the key, is to get those casual sports fans to understand that this is something big. And it was the other thing that just kind of, you know, I don't know how it was maybe in your area. I know you were working earlier that night, so I don't know if you had kind of dealt with this, but it was tough for me to find which – I mean, look, and I'm in the sports bar marketing world. It was tough for me to find out which bars were showing it. I was only able to find two bars that were showing it. Both had a cover, which knowing I knew how much the pay-per-view was costing a business, I wasn't surprised that there was a cover there. The place I went to was a $15 cover. Another place that was showing it was a $20 cover. Both those places show UFC pay-per-views as well. Never do a cover for a UFC pay-per-view. But, you know, to me, that was kind of, you know, where I think that one of the things I think the UFC does really well is it's very easy to find out which bars are showing UFC events. They have a website that tells you which places are showing the event. That's one thing I think boxing has to kind of some way get that message out to kind of help the consumer know who's showing the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's a real simple way, something where we are so used to basic things being answered by a quick Google, and that doesn't seem to be the case here. I think it's hard to centralize these deals because it's so fractured and fragmented, but this is a clear thing where you got to figure it out. But fortunately, down here in the Rio Grande Valley, you don't have to go to a bar because we get like the Mexican channel somehow on Spectrum, and they just show the fights for free.
Oh, wow.
Granted, with Spanish commentary, but it's kind of awesome. But people will still buy the fights just to hear the English commentary and the American presentation. But
I'm sorry,
it's really cool.
Daniel, I'd be cheap and just put it on mute.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But I went even cheaper and just mooshed off a friend who bought it. So that's the best way to go about it. You go there, you eat whatever wings he has left over. I mean, I guess the last thing we can talk about is when I was going to watch the fight, I was working a soccer game. And I was getting out of this soccer game like at, you know, the soccer game ended like at 9:50 Central Time, so 10:50 Eastern Time. And when I just checked my Twitter, I was absolutely stunned to see that the fight was just about to start. I couldn't believe it. How could this fight start so early?
I was loving it because I truly didn't expect that they wouldn't start walking until about 11:45 Eastern Time. And I remember they started showing these vignettes, and I was out watching the fights with my brother, and I was like, man, these vignettes would be something like you would play like right before the fight. And I'm like, man, there's no way. And all of a sudden, boom, they start doing the national anthems. Here they come. And I'm just like, hey, look, I'm not complaining because I had to be up early Sunday to go work the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network broadcast. So I wasn't complaining. So it got me to bed about an hour before I expected to, but yeah, I mean, and by the way, for those people who, you know, want to go out to watch a UFC event and you don't know which ones are showing in your area, it's bars.ufc.com. You put in your zip code, it'll tell you the confirmed locations for that pay-per-view. It's a great asset. I mean, I just, you know, when it comes to UFC pay-per-views, you know, when it's this time of year, it's depending on whether I'm home or not. But or even on the road, I use that website to find out who are showing it. But when I'm in Tampa, I usually go to the same bar. We usually pretty much sit at the same location at the bar every time. But you know, it's I always say this: it's an interesting experience to go out to a bar and watch a fight. You know, I've talked about this countless times. I think as if you cover this sport, it's something you should do, because I think it definitely opens up your eyes to a lot of things about this sport. But I enjoyed it. You know, it does, you know, it's crazy. I saw Luke Thomas kind of mention this the other day. I mean, there's people out there that like to say, you know, oh, boxing isn't, you know, what it was. But let's be honest about it. Boxing's had a much better year than MMA in 2017.
Dude, yeah. I mean, between that Mayweather-McGregor fight probably earned more money than all the UFC fights combined this year. Probably.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
I don't know how that works out specifically, but it's real simple, man. For the time being, American culture, world culture, loves two guys getting into a ring, two women get into a ring, punching each other in the face and figuring out who's the badass. Like, that's just amazing. You can build your storyline over fighter A, build your storyline over fighter B. But, I mean, how great are boxing movies and how great is it in real life? Boxing, to me, is a sport that you can write its obituary time and again, but I swear to God, it'll keep on coming back to life like a Walking Dead zombie, because it's just something that is, I mean, simply put, man, the seconds prior to a big time fight is unlike anything in the world, and all we're doing is watching. So, yeah, man, I'm sure that somebody will step up. Maybe one day we'll get that Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua fight, some deal. But boxing, it will never die until, like, you know, we get really concerned about the long-term effects of contact sports, which is a thing that will likely happen, but probably not in our lifetimes.
But it was weird on Saturday. I saw the Dana White Instagram video where he is promoting UFC Pittsburgh, but also promoting Canelo GGG, which I get as a fight fan how much you love it. But, man, if you're the promoter of the UFC, should you really be promoting a boxing fight that's going up against your card?
Yeah, like, what else? Are you going to promote USC versus Texas? I mean, I just think that's a bad idea. All focus should be on your product. But I think Dana, you know, man, Dana, I'm not going to say he has one foot out the door, because he's so gung-ho and so hyper-focused with his product that that's a bad comment to mention. But it does seem like he has a foot out the door, man. Like, he has an eye towards boxing. That is something that's apparent.
It's just, and I was thinking about this, okay? When is the last fight night card? Now, and I'm excluding Fox cards. When is the last fight night card on FS1 or UFC Fight Pass that Dana White's actually gone to?
Oh, man, I don't know. He's on the Scott Coker schedule. I do not know, man.
I mean, you rare, because it's one of those things, and I know people will hate this fact, but Dana White is the face of the UFC. And I think, you know, if Dana went to Pittsburgh, you know, obviously he could do all the local media hits. And, you know, because look, I went on Ticketmaster to look at the website, and we talked about it on the preview show. There was plenty of tickets on the, you know, available, and not, you know, and relatively not expensive tickets. It's just one of those things where, and you are not the first person to say publicly or just in private conversation with me that kind of feel like Dana is one foot out the door.
Yeah. But that makes sense. Again, we've talked about this one time where it's like, if you do anything in life for longer than 6 weeks, you already get tired, much less a decade plus, 2 decades. Like, it's understandable for someone like Dana White to want to change the deal, because literally everyone in life always changes what they do. It's and it makes sense for one to be burnt out. So, and I feel like, you know, his one love in the very beginning was boxing, right? He was an all-time great boxer, according to the UFC documentary. They'll probably be releasing a few years about it. But I guess the other thing about the fight night, and again, I don't want to bury this fight night card, because this was literally, like, if not the best card of the year, one of the best cards of the year when it comes to just the pure action. There wasn't much juice heading into this card, not much hype. But I guess I would ask you, man, when's the last time there was an FS1 card that you felt like had juice or hype? Like, you were excited. The casuals were excited.
Man, oh, God. You,
does Does BJ Penn versus Jair Rodriguez count?
I don't even know. I don't know if you would say that had buzz. But I think you're definitely on to something there. Let's look at the fight night cards this year. So let's just go from most recent. Struve versus Volkov. There was no interest from that one.
Yep.
Pettis Moreno. Nothing really there. If you want to count the Fox cards, we had Weidman Gaslam before that, Nelson Ponzinibbio, the Ultimate Fighter finale, Kiesa Lee, Holm Correa, Lewis Hunt, Gustafsson Teixeira. I mean, that was a big fight.
Yeah, that one I would count. Yeah.
Swanson Lobov, Johnson Heiss, Manoa Anderson, Belfort Gaslam, Lewis Brown. Bermudez, Korean Zombie, Shevchenko, Pena, Rodriguez, Penn. That's your fight nights in 2017.
Yeah, man, it's unfortunate. It really is. And then fortunately, they're going to be able to really capitalize on a big time fight this Friday with St. Preux and Yushin Okami. So that will change the shit.
That's a odd change to me.
Well, I think they needed somebody to get to Japan and with the passport or whatever, some type of worker's visa. I don't know how it works.
And the thing about Yushin Okami, and since he lost to Fitch and Branch, he has won 4 in a row. Most recently, winning back in July at PFL 2. And obviously steps up to 205. You give him kudos for that. OSP, I think. I have a feeling you're going to see a devastating knockout by OSP in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that Okami was, for a while, like, almost a John Fitch at middleweight
yes.
in the UFC. I mean, that's how I would describe him. So this was a guy who was a top 5 middleweight consistently for a long period of time. But that was 7 years ago. That was 6 years ago, 5 years ago. So it's been a while, and some of those losses and World Series of Fighting, I think, have really damaged him. I still got to break down the fight, and I need to look at actually – I got to try and find some of his non-World Series of Fighting fights that he's fought in. But who knows? Maybe he can pull off the upset. But it's one in which you think immediately the first thought is OSP's going to have a field day.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that fight card, and obviously we'll preview it later on this week, along with previewing Bellator 183. Gokhan Saki probably, is that the thing you're most interested in that fight card? I mean, I guess you could say Gedalia and Andrade as a co-main
event. That's what I'm looking forward to. But yeah, Saki and Henrique. And then I can also, wow, I mean, Taruta's on the card, but dude, I did not realize Takanori Gomi had another fight in the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
That is wow.
Yeah, and but how much of that is because it's in Japan?
How much is that? 127%. I mean, duh. I mean, dude, he looked so bad in his last fight. He's an absolute legend. But geez, I mean, he's fighting Dong Hyun Kim. Unfortunately, it's the lesser. But gosh, he looked bad in his last fight, and then in his fight before that, and the fight before that. Like, ooh, that's a bad one, man.
Remember,
bad
he's lost 4 in a row, all by stoppage in the first round.
Well, yeah, fortunately, some of those are submission, but I mean, he's in a bad spot. This is a bad card, but Juicier Formiga Oka Sasaki is one to look at. I don't really understand the makeup of this card and where people are placed, but you nailed it, man. This card's 1-2 punch is Gokhan Saki and the women's strawweight bout between Gadella and Andrade. That is a phenomenal fight.
But at least it's on Friday night as opposed to Saturday night, because if that fight card was on Saturday night, and you're sitting at home, you're watching the Bellator fight card. The Bellator card is 1,000 times better.
Yeah, Bellator, for one, is winning the weekend. They are certainly going to win this weekend in terms of fight quality. It's not close at all.
Like, if someone's listening to this and you don't know the Bellator 183 fight card, it is a unbelievable lineup that they have put together. Of course, it's headlined by Benson Henderson and Patricky Pitbull. By the way, Patricky Pitbull will be on this week's episode of the MMA Report. You got your guy, Javi Ayala, in the co-main against Roy Nelson. We got Paul Daly, Lorenz Larkin, Gochi Yamauchi, Adam Piccolotti. That is probably the fight I am most interested in on that fight card. Just so, two outstanding prospects there. I don't even know if you can call Gochi a prospect anymore.
It's been around a while, but yeah.
Piccolotti, definitely a prospect. You got Aaron Pico versus Justin Lin. You know, what happens there between those two? I mean, it's just, it's a great lineup they have on there. Also, they've got Bellator Kickboxing is happening on that night as well. So Bellator definitely, I mean, look, if you're going to watch one MMA event this week, it's got to be Bellator.
Yeah, I think you have to ask how many of these fights would be on the UFC main card. And I would probably say three of them for sure, maybe four. But that's just because they do a weird process of putting fights on the main card. But to me, the fight of the weekend would be Daly Lorenz Larkin, or that would be the one I would most want to see out of anything, just because I think it has a more likelihood of being entertaining than Henderson Patrycki. I still think that's a good fight. And I'm super interested in Aaron Pico because, like, a second loss, this time against a guy who isn't his last opponent, an RFA main eventer, that would be so devastating for a fighter who I was convinced was the greatest boxer ever, the greatest wrestler ever, could perform heart surgery and deliver your child with his feet. Like, I could have sworn Aaron Pico was supposed to be the third coming of a specific religious guy or something. But yeah, if he loses two in a row, ooh, that's a bad one. There's a lot on the line, and I think this is a vintage Strikeforce card. This is what you want if you're Bellator. If you're Bellator, is to have a big time show in California.
Yeah, I would say I had a fascinating conversation with Aaron last week and talked about a lot of things, and it's gonna be interesting to see how he does in this matchup now. He's only training at two gyms. He's not going, you know, back and forth between multiple gyms. He's just training at Body Shop under Antonio McKee and working on his boxing with Freddie Roach. So it'll be interesting, but that was definitely a good fight card. But we do want to talk about UFC Pittsburgh. I mean, look, we've said a couple times in this podcast, it was a fight card leading into it. Not much buzz, not much excitement, but it's a fight card that just delivered top to bottom. I mean, even after the fights were over, Eves Edwards on the post-fight show said, hey, you know, this is those cards that people don't talk about. Man, but did the guys go out and deliver? I mean, there's a couple of things that, you know what, just shocked me. I mean, first off, Gilbert Burns with the knockout over Jason Sago right from the start. How about Uriah Hall weathering that early storm where, I mean, you almost thought that the referee was going to come in and stop that at any moment. Then, of course, he knocks out Jocko there in the second round, dropping with the right hand. The right hand seemed to be the kind of defining moment of this entire fight card, getting that win over Jocko. Daniel Spitz against Anthony Hamilton. You know, at first, when I saw the knockout, I was like, man, you know, Big Dan came in pretty quick there. But once you watch the replay, you kind of understand why Dan did come in there. Amin Mercier, Tony Martin, I think it just comes down to how you score that first round of who you think won that fight. You know, you mentioned Zhu and Ledet, you know, not much really to say there. I mean, Kamaru Usman, maybe he's the guy I walk away from this fight card most impressed with.
He's the guy who went out and showcased his stand-up, looked dominant, and we didn't really even think about what his best tool is in for winning fights, mm-hmm. is wrestling. That is the most impressive thing. That's something where Mike Perry called out Robbie Lawler, but Kamaru Usman is the guy who I would favor, or not favor, but I think has a better chance against Robbie Lawler. It's just between anybody on this card, save for Luke Rockhold, because he's obviously in that middleweight elite category, Usman showcased just the biggest upside of how high I think he can climb, because what you see out of him is what you see out of a lot of great fighters. Major improvement from fight to fight in different skill sets, and in this one it was his stand-up, which is not what you think when you think of Kamaru Usman. He has already, in a couple times here, showcased great striking, but for the most part your thought process is he's going to come out and utilize his wrestling, and he didn't need to against Sergio Moraes.
Yeah, I mean, you just talked the evolution of Kamaru Usman as a fighter. Loved his post-fight interview, absolutely loved it. You know, I love Mike Perry calling out Robbie Lawler. Is he going to get that fight? No. I mean, but you know what? Call him out. And maybe all of a sudden Robbie goes, all right, dude, let's do it. And maybe you get that fight. I don't think it's a fight the UFC would make right now. Mike Perry's got to work his way up. You know, the only issue I would have with Mike Perry, and you know, look, I don't think anyone should blame Thiago Alves for deciding, no, I'm dealing with a hurricane, I'm going to be here with my wife, and my, you know, and my child, who I believe, as I read, 13-month-old child. I don't think anyone can blame him for pulling out of that fight. And you know, look, and I can tell you this. My understanding is the gym and American Top Team didn't have power, that they lost power. A lot of people down in that Coconut Creek area, you know, lost power. I, by no way do I believe Thiago Alves was running from fighting, you know, Mike Perry. Because if he didn't want to fight Mike Perry, why would he have signed the contract, you know, initially? So, I mean, that's to me, like, you know, I think there's things in life, and I can understand if you're Mike Perry, you're frustrated that you had done all these preparations for Thiago Alves and ultimately a fight does not happen. But there's bigger things in life than fighting in the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't even play Miami, Florida State this week. It's a big deal, man. And it's like, why go after someone affected by a hurricane when you just had a phenomenal win?
And a guy who lives, and Mike Perry lives in Florida.
Yeah, that too, man. Like, just chill out, bro. Like, this is be a decent person for half a second and allow a person to deal with a significant disaster. And it's Thiago Alves isn't scared of anybody. I mean, it's the same deal with the Amanda Nunes thing when people said she was scared of Shevchenko. It's like, if you've been fighting professionally at a high level for a specific long period of time, man, nothing scares you. It's just dumb. Although Mike Perry is very scary. Like, I will admit that. He hits hard. Poor Alex Reyes, man. This was not a good set up for him taking this fight against a much heavier fighter on like a few days notice, but he must get another fight. That must have been negotiated alluded to.
Yeah, you can guarantee that one.
Great night for callouts, man. Like people were on their A game. Daniel Spitz at heavyweight getting that win over Anthony Hamilton and then calling out Chase Sherman was like perfect. Because he didn't, like, overshoot. Like you got to shoot your shot, you know, in life, whatever. You have a cute girl, ask her out. You have a cute guy, ask him out. You know, a lot of guys shoot their shot and, like, oh, I want to challenge Stipe Miocic after my big win over Anthony Hamilton. No, Daniel Spitz got his win and challenged Chase Sherman, which is such a smart move because Sherman's kind of a little above him. And he's, like, a guy who's really grasping at social media-wise. So, he was prepared, and he wasn't the only one. These guys cut some good post-fight promos with real direction.
Yeah, it's just great to see, you know, guys, you know, I mean, how many times do we talk about take advantage of that microphone? And they took advantage of it, you know, the main event. You know, look, David Branch brought it in that opening round. And I put this on Twitter, and the only answer I got was Tito Ortiz. But can you remember the last UFC fighter that tapped the strikes?
I can't.
I can't recall. Now, have I seen it on the regional scene? Yes, but in the UFC, I you know, something you just hardly ever see.
Yeah. Just a simple Google of like submission punches UFC does not come back with the real effective results. I can't really figure out how many, but I hope we don't like make this the story here because. Yeah, I don't care if he tapped out or didn't, man. That fight was over. He was pinned down, and he couldn't defend himself. Like, it's smarter to take yourself out of this fight than allow more concussive blows because this one was over at that point. But you don't see it often, man. You really don't. And David Branch impressed me in this fight because I really thought there was a big-time talent gap between him and Luke Rockhold, and maybe there still is. But that first round, Dave Branch was real aggressive, real on it, and looked much better on the feet than I would have, than I talked about in the pre-fight show. So I came away a bit impressed out of Branch, but it seemed like Luke Rockhold just in middle of the second round just put it into the high gear, man. Got that takedown, and as soon as he got that positioning, Dave Branch was trapped, which is an impressive feat for somebody as skilled on the ground as Dave Branch for Luke Rockhold to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw it was some kind of interesting tweets that people had out there about Luke Rockhold. I think Ring Rust definitely probably played a little bit into it. We're talking a year and a half away for almost a year and a half away for Luke Rockhold. I think there was a lot of maybe questions people maybe had about Luke Rockhold's chin. But, I mean, look, Luke puts himself right there in the mix. You look at there's interesting options. You know, we'll see what happens with Biz being in GSP. If for some reason, GSP doesn't make it to November 4th, I would have obviously no problem with Luke stepping in. Or even, you know, obviously Robert Whitaker's not an option. He's dealing with recovering from injury. But, Luke is, right there in the mix. And, I think in a way you elevate David Branch a little bit just based on what he was able to do there in that first round. You got to mention Anthony Smith with that knockout there. I mean, you could see that momentum and that fight turned late in the second round. And that third round, you could just see the confidence was there with Anthony Smith. Big win for him. I would expect Hector Lombard gets cut by the UFC. Fight of the night, Gillespie and Gonzalez. Holy cow, those two guys just went at it.
Yeah, I really thought Jocko Hall was going to be the fight of the night because of the beautiful story of the comeback, but Gillespie Gonzalez took that fight away from those guys. I mean, what a fight. I love Jason Gonzalez because, Gillespie was going to put the fight where he wanted it, on the ground, but throughout, man, he would not give up. Constant action, constant feedback on the feet. It was exciting. It was just nonstop action. And kudos to Jason Gonzalez for being a real active fighter in a losing effort. And a great fight, one of the best fights of the year. And Gregor Gillespie looked good, man. I'm really excited to watch him fight and continue to fight at lightweight. I mean, this is a tough division, but it's one where he stood out thus far. And the second thing about him is he has kind of started to label himself as an exciting fighter. So I'm looking forward to him. And Jason Gonzalez impressed me, and I hope he gets another fight just from the sheer quality of this one.
Yeah, it was that was a very fun fight there. But overall, just a fun fight card, that delivered on Saturday night. Of course, mentioned a little earlier, the UFC does have a fight card coming up on Friday night of this week. Was announced during a broadcast that Shogun was out, so OSP is now taking on Logan St. Preux. We got Bellator card. By the way, the fight, performance of the night bonuses, I mean, could have gone multiple different ways, but they go Uriah Hall and Mike Perry. Gillespie and Gonzalez was your performance of the night winners. But, I think ultimately, as we kind of wrap everything up here, if you're talking about using the hockey term, three stars a night, the number one star to me has to be Kamaru Usman. It has to be.
Yeah, I'm not even going to disagree with you. I would go with him unless you wanted to go with Gillespie because of the quality of his fight. But if we're giving stars to pure performance and skill level, Usman is the guy, for sure. I agree with you. And I think if you're doling out a second star, like, I would probably go, it's tough. But I feel like I'm going to leave out Uriah Hall here, and it's unfortunate. But I still think winning in the main event is like enough to guarantee you one of the three stars. So I would go Luke Rockhold number two.
Yeah, I think it's very tough to leave out Uriah Hall just because of, just weathering that early storm in the first round, just, really bad opening round for him, but then to come back. But it's, I looked at the betting odds, the closing betting odds. Kamar Usman was a 10-1 favorite. I mean, that's crazy when you look. I mean, Sergio Moraes had, been on a great run at welterweight in the UFC, had not lost at 170 pounds. I mean, that to me is just kind of crazy. It's, when you look at those closing betting odds, it's betting odds we typically never see in a UFC event. I mean, Luke was a 5-1 favorite. Mike Perry was a 4-1 favorite. Anthony Smith was a 1.5-1 favorite. Gillespie was a 4-1 favorite. I mentioned Kamar being a 10-1 favorite. Ledette was nearly a 5-1 favorite. I mean, something we rarely see in a UFC event, but it did happen there. But how do you put money on Usman as a 10-1 favorite?
Makes no sense. I don't understand why one would do it. I mean, throw it in a parlay and it still doesn't add much value to the parlay. I don't know, man. I think what we should have mentioned, and we need to remember to mention every time, is when you do see a card with such heavy odds, those are the exciting ones. Those are the ones with finishes. When you have mismatches, guys are going to go out there and get finishes, and that is pretty exciting. I mean, that was the formula for a lot of Strikeforce cards, where you had big time mismatches and big time finishes. So that is one thing to diagnose, and maybe that is the, you know, that whole narrative of when you have a crap UFC card on paper, it always lives up and surprises you. Maybe that's why, because the mismatches which make it crap on paper lead to exciting finishes, which is what we got here.
Yeah, he just, you know, very, very fun and enjoyable UFC fight card to watch. Of course, later on this week, we will have a preview podcast. We're going to talk about UFC Fight Night Japan, of course, headlined by OSP. Take it all, Yushinokami. Also, we're going to talk about Bellator 183. Last week's episode of the MMA Report podcast, I did have conversations with Benson Henderson, Paul Daly, and Aaron Pico, so you can check that out on RadioInfluence.com, also all the podcasting platforms, and also the MMAReport.com. Coming up this week on the MMA Report podcast, we're going to continue talking Bellator 183. Going to be joined by Patricky Pitbull, Lorenz Larkin, and Justin Lin. I will tell you, I talked to Lorenz Larkin on Friday. Daniel, he's pretty fired up. Pretty fired. One of the things he told me, which I, you know, was obviously the kind of the big part of the interview, and it was, I think it was like right at the end of the interview. Because I'll be honest with you, we didn't talk much about Paul Daly. We talked about a lot of other things. It was just a good conversation to have. But one thing he told me is that this is the first time in his career he's actually hated his opponent.
Wow.
And he goes, I want to, you know, physically hurt him. And he related that by talking to, like, you know, Douglas Lima about him and Douglas after the fight. You know, they you know, congratulate each other, talked about everything. And he said, he goes, yes, we're going in there to harm our opponent. He goes, but I've never gone into a fight wanting to hurt my opponent long term. Like, I think his exact quote is, I hope he never fights again after this matchup.
That's a weird tone for Lorenz Larkin.
And Lorenz is a very, like, I've talked to Lorenz before. He's a very happy-going guy. I mean, he was fired up. So I've got that. Also, going to be talking to Caleb Williams, who's a local fighter, trains at American Top Team. So going to have a conversation with him about, he was supposed to fight coming up this weekend, but due to Hurricane Irma and the aftermath of that, the promotion had to move their card back a couple weeks due to some commission issues in terms of, you know, not having officials ready to go. So we talked about that, but also going to talk about how American Top Team fighters have had to deal with Hurricane Irma. You know, I think it's one of those stories that really isn't being told out there. It's one of the things I always like to try to do. So we've got that coming up on Wednesday. Of course, on Friday, we've got the preview podcast. And then, Daniel, this weekend, I head up to Minneapolis, get to see the new Vikings stadium for the first time.
I'm sure it's absolutely beautiful, man. I'm sure it'll be a great look, a setup, and be interesting to see who you guys go up against, Case Keenum or Sam Bradford. But
it looks like Bradford's not going.
Yeah, I saw some quote where the coach was like, "It's either 1 week he'll be fine or 6 weeks." So I'm like, definitely not 1 week. If you mentioned both two dates, yeah, man, NFL season. I don't know if it's picked up quite yet, man. I college football picked up on Saturday. I was surprised that the last sporting event I saw Saturday night was Texas-USC. That's not something I expected it would have been in the boxing ring. But maybe this upcoming week, things will start to pick up in the NFL with some of these crazy games. And we had a couple good ones this past Sunday. But I really thought, man, that USC-Texas game, that to me was the game of the weekend out of any sport.
Yeah, one of the advantages of when the Buccaneers play a home game is all day Saturday, I just literally just sit on my couch and I watch football. I my wife just, you know, she laughs at me because I'll have one game on the television, then I'll have another game on the computer, another game on the iPad. You know what I don't like this year, Daniel? I don't know if you noticed this. You remember
what's
before
that?
On the Watch ESPN, if you went on your computer, you could watch four games at one time? They don't allow that anymore. You can only have one game on.
They probably want you to watch that freaking goal line deal.
Oh, I love goal line. Oh, that,
I do
that,
too.
That's
I
my
do
favorite
too,
channel.
But that's what they want you to do then. That has to be it, right? Like,
yeah, dude, but I want to watch like eight games at one time.
Yeah, I understand, Jason. You addict.
Yeah, I'm a football addict. Yes.
I get you, man. I did not know they did that. I was watching that goal line in the press box of the soccer game the entire day. Gosh, you know what would be perfect? Although I think it would be literally impossible because of so many games that go on. But imagine a red zone for college football with every single game. I know that's just not how it works, but oh my gosh. Because when I'm watching the ESPN goal line, like I'm missing out on the Fox games and the Big Ten games. But yeah, man, college football to me, it's the best.
I only know why. I don't know, since you're working, you probably didn't see Florida Tennessee. There was a moment in that game I'm like, why am I watching this game? This is boring football. And then, of course, the end of the game happens, and hey, Jim McElwain, how about you show some excitement? Your team just won with a Hail Mary at the end of the game.
Was that the first offensive touchdown or second offensive
touchdown?
That would
have been their second offensive touchdown. Yes, it took them seven quarters to score a touchdown.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that Florida-Tennessee game was one of the more exciting top 25 games of the week, which is not what I've expected. And I saw the beginning, and it really helped me go to sleep. But
oh, look, yeah. I feel bad for, you know, look, I'm a Florida State fan. I feel bad for my Gator friends because that's not exciting football to watch their offense.
For like the past 5 years, it's
weird.
They
haven't had a quarterback since Tim Tebow. And Tebow graduated in what, 2009?
Yeah, he graduated from 2009, and since then he's, you know,
it's 2017.
It's been a while, Jason. It's been a while, and I guess in the ACC, man, do you hear the Hokies sniffing at behind your back? 3-0, great quarterback. They're back, Virginia Tech.
Okay, when you start playing the big boys of that conference, let me know.
Okay, well, at least they weren't dumb enough to schedule Alabama week one. It's like, hello, how would you like to start your college football? By going up against the army of darkness. Okay.
Hey, I'll say this. I was watching that Clemson game. Man, that's oof. Yeah, you got to give Dabo a lot of credit there. And obviously they're a great defensive team, but to, you know, throw in a young kid in there and to do what they did. I mean, man, that's They're definitely right up there, you know. It's but I finally get to watch a Florida State game this weekend. Hopefully it's on, you know, hopefully it's on the plane heading up to Minneapolis so I can catch that. Or maybe they'll have a goal line channel on the airplane. I can just watch it via that. So yeah,
looking should be good, man.
Yeah, and the good thing about going up to Minneapolis this time of year, it's not freezing cold.
Yeah, man, you lucked out here in terms of your schedule.
Yeah, we go to Green Bay December 3rd.
Oof.
and let's just be honest about it. If both teams are what, you know, everyone thinks, there's no way that stays a 1 o'clock game.
Oh yeah,
no way.
Yeah. That's a Sunday nighter. I don't know what else is that week, but if those two teams are in playoff contention,
if Fox doesn't protect that game, oh, it's going to Sunday night.
Yeah, I guess so. If Fox can get it for the evening.
Yeah, well, Fox can when you go to Fox scheduling, Fox and CBS, they can protect one game. And basically, when they protect that game has to go to 4:30. Mm. So yeah, I mean, I'm a football guy. I love football, and that's the best part of my job is one of the best parts of my job is just going out to travel out and go out to cities I normally wouldn't go to. I like Minneapolis. We always have a good time there.
They got a pretty good downtown, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, the last time we played there, I don't know if it was the beginning of the regular season. It had to be the beginning of the regular season. I don't think we played there in preseason. We actually went to Target Field and watched a Twins game. And, had a good time there. You know, that was back in the old Metrodome. So, last time we played there, I think we actually played at the University of Minnesota.
Was that because the roof collapsed?
No, this would have been after the roof collapsed. It's last time we went there, we were playing at University of Minnesota. So that's always, it's because University of Minnesota, it's a smaller stadium. I always have a good time. Minneapolis is one of those favorite spots. I mean, it's no New Orleans,
Yeah.
New Orleans is definitely, New Orleans, San Fran's, they're one of my favorite places to go to.
Yeah, I can see why. Those locations are absolutely beautiful or party.
Like Green Bay, I mean, there's the nostalgia of Lambeau Field. That's cool. Really, really interesting how the fans kind of react there. It's it's a very unique atmosphere for an NFL game. Very unique atmosphere. So, but yeah, there's definitely, and then of course, you know, if I go to a city of maybe someone I used to work with in the past or went to school with, and you get to go, you know, hang out and, you know, get dinner with them. That's a cool part of it too.
Yeah, man, that seems like the life to be, and you know, just gotta sit down and enjoy a great Buccaneers win last week and maybe another one this week.
Look, it's like Jameis Winston said in the post game interview, you know. We're going to Minnesota this week, but we want to have another game there later this year. So,
hell yeah,
I love it. You know, I always love when teams do, you know, videotape those post game, you know, in the locker room. I think that's really cool. You know, very cool to see that. But that is going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report post fight podcast. Of course, we'll be back on Friday. We're going to preview the UFC and Bellator fight cards this week. As I mentioned, I'll have the MMA Report coming up later this week, so be sure to check that out. Also, be sure to check out all the programs we have here at RadioInfluence.com. Of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Of course, follow myself on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. And if you have any questions about this weekend's fights, just send us a tweet, and we will get those questions and comments here on the podcast. So I appreciate everyone listening. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report Post Fight Podcast on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.